My name's Al Danzig, and this is a reading from Robert Fulghum. A rabbi and I once engaged in a friendly intellectual hockey match trying to choose a single word to summarize human wisdom. He submitted a Hebrew word, timshel, T-I-M-S-H-E-L, timshel. It's found in the oldest story in our common literature, in Genesis, the book of the beginnings. After being expelled from the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve had two sons. The elder, called Cain, was the firstborn outside of the Garden of Paradise. In time, Cain grew up, cultivated his land, and brought his first fruits as an offering to God. The offering was rejected. And Jehovah explained to Cain that he was tangled up with evil. It lurked around his door. But, Jehovah said, you may triumph over evil and have abundant life. That's the crucial sentence. The last thing Jehovah said to Cain, you may triumph over evil and have abundant life. The critical word is the second one, the verb may, timshel in Hebrew. Timshel has been interpreted to mean you shall. That's an order, a command. Timshel has been interpreted to mean you will, which means predestination. Timshel has even been interpreted to mean you cannot, which suggests hopelessness, dependence. All these interpretations define a relationship with God that may very little freedom. My friend, the rabbi, feels that the practical meaning of this passage of scripture concerns vitality, meaning don't be dead. Don't be a passive victim. Be active. Be alive. He reads it as good advice. There is a problem with evil. You really should learn to deal with it. In modern English, timshel means it may be, or simply, maybe. Maybe, maybe, maybe. That's the word, maybe. The wisest answer to ultimate questions. A word pointing at open doors and wide horizons. Maybe. I do not believe that the meaning of life is a puzzle to be solved. Life is, I am, anything might happen. And I believe I might invest my life with meaning. The uncertainty is a blessing in disguise. If I were absolutely certain about all things, I would spend my life in anxious misery, fearful of losing my way. But since everything and anything is always possible, the miraculous is always nearby, wonders shall never cease. I believe that human freedom may be stated in one term, which serves as a little brick popping open the door of existence. Maybe.
So I've had the pleasure of officiating at several weddings so far in my time as a minister, including a couple for folks in this congregation. And weddings are truly a joyful time. They're a time of love and connection and community. They also are comedies. Now, weddings aren't intended as such, of course, but since they are high-state occasions involving amateurs under pressure, everything never goes right. Now, the central figure in the story that I want to talk to you about today was the mother of the bride, one strong, powerful woman. We'll call her the M-O-T-B. Now, the story's not about the groom or the bride or the minister, but the
M-O-T-B. Now, usually she was a polite, intelligent, reasonable, and sane human being, but Mother was left completely unhinged by the announcement of her daughter's betrothal. Not that she was unhappy about it, which is often the case. No, she was actually overcome with joy and just about succeeded in overcoming everybody else with that same joy. You see, nobody knew it, but this lady had a script for a production that would have met with the approval of Cecil B. DeMille. A royal wedding fit for a princess bride. The father of the bride began to pray for an elopement. Now, she had 7 months to work, and no detail was left to chance or error. Everything that could be engraved was engraved. There were teas and showers and dinners. An 18-piece brass and wind ensemble was engaged. Now, the bride and groom met with the minister in his office exactly 3 times. The MOTB was in there more than the janitor. Not only were the bridesmaids' outfits made to order, but the tuxedos for the groom and his men were bought. Not rented, mind you, but bought. And that engagement ring returned to the jeweler for one with a larger stone, quietly subsidized by the MOTB. Juggernaut of fate rolled down the road, and the final hour came. Guests in formal attire packed the church. Enough candles were lit to bring daylight back to the evening. From the choir loft, the orchestra gushed great music, and the mighty MOTB coasted down the aisle with the grandeur of an opera diva attending a premiere performance. I mean, no other mother of the bride has ever taken her seat with such satisfaction. She had done it, right? She glowed, she beamed, she smiled, she sighed. The music softened, and 9 chiffon-draped bridesmaids lockstepped down the aisle, followed by the groom and his men. Finally, the wedding march thundered. Here comes the bride, preceded, of course, by 4 mini princesses chunking flower petals and 2 munchkin ring bearers, 1 for each ring. The congregation rose and turned in anticipation. Ah, at last, the bride. Now, the bride, she had been dressed at this point for hours, if not days. There was no adrenaline left in her body. You see, left alone with her father in the social hall before the service began, she had walked alongside the tables piled high with gourmet goodies, picking her way first through the pink and yellow and green mints, followed by a cheese ball or two, a handful of glazed olives, some candied almonds, one of those little shrimps blanketed with bacon, and some crackers piled high with liver pate. And then, to wash it all down, a glass of pink champagne, given to her by her father to calm her nerves. So what you noticed, as the bride stood there at the end of the aisle, was not her dress, which was beautiful and also subsidized by the MOTB. No, it wasn't her dress, it was her face. White, with a certain undertone of green to it. And what no one knew was that coming down the aisle was a living grenade with the pin pulled out. The bride, how do I say this? The bride, I want to be polite here, the bride threw up just as she passed by her mother. And when I say threw up, I'd like to say it was this polite little lady-like into her handbag. No, I mean she hosed the front of the chancel. Hitting first the groom, the minister, 2 ring bearers, and... Oh, It was bad. Well, the bride slumped down in her father's arms, and the groom just sat down where he was standing, too stunned to move. And the MOTB moaned, slumped over in her chair, and then passed out cold. Well, there was what I can only call a fire drill then and there at the front of the church that only the Marx brothers could rival. Groomsmen ran heroically around. Mini princess flower girls squalled, bridesmaids sobbed, and people with weak stomachs headed for the exits. There were only two people seen smiling during this time. One was the father of the bride, and the other, the mother of the groom. So what happened next? Well, we all went back to real life. Guests were adjourned to the social hall, but do I need to say nobody ate or drank as much as they would have under different circumstances? The bride was consoled, cleaned up, and outfitted with a bridesmaid gown, and then hugged and kissed a lot by the groom. She'll always love him for that. I mean, when he said for better or worse that day, he meant it, right? The cast was reassembled. A lone flute played a quiet air. The words were spoken, and the deed was done. Everybody cried, as people usually do at weddings, but mostly because the groom held the bride in his arms through the whole ceremony, and no groom has ever kissed a bride as tenderly as he. You know, if one can hope for a wedding that it be memorable, then theirs was indeed a raging success. Nobody will ever forget it. They lived happily ever after. Well, as happily ever after as anybody does. They have two lively children and have been married about 12 years now. But that's not the end of the story. On the 10th anniversary of this disastrous event, a party was held. A feast was laid, and four television sets were mustered. You see, there had been four video cameras at the scene of this event. The MOTB had thought of everything. So all four videos were shown at once. And I have to say, the effect was pretty interesting, what with the stop-motion action stuff and the running commentary throughout the whole thing. The part that got the most laughs and cheers was when the camera zoomed in on the grin of the father of the bride as he watches his wife being revived. I like this part of the story, not because of the party, but because of who organized it. Yeah, the MOTB. She's still at it, but she's a lot looser these days. And nobody laughed harder at those videos than she. There's a word for what she has. Grace. Grace. Not only did she forgive her husband and everybody else for their part in this debacle, she forgave herself. And that's why her daughter loves her still. Why her husband has been married to her for 40 years. Grace. A word we Unitarian Universalists, with our emphasis on rationality, we don't always talk about grace very much. I'm not sure we even know what it means sometimes. We have to spend a lot of time defining it, and by the time we're done with that, we have trouble feeling it. But I think grace is a kind of unexpected rescue. In a time of chaos like this wedding, where everything went wrong, it's a way of finding our humanity, of re-engaging back with ourselves, and recognizing that there is still the possibility of everything being okay, as long as we have graciousness in our response to it. As we think of the ills and challenges in our world today, as we think of the stories of the women who have come forth I think there is a certain amount of grace there. A willingness to share stories. A willingness to be supporters during this time. The willingness to step out of what we have known and become something else, especially when we don't know what that something else might quite be. There's grace there. Grace is the unexpected. It's the starlight. It's the dream. It's that thing beyond what we know in our heads but feel in our hearts. Grace is what we've lost as a country at times like these, that we look around and recognize that it's hard to find grace across our differences. But this morning, as we've taken a little time to laugh, as we've taken time to share stories, taken time to listen to beautiful music, I hope we've let in that little flicker of hope that is born out of grace. For it is in that hope, in those little dreams that we light in our hearts, that we find a way forward. May it be so.